Chesamid Beis. This is where we left off last time. And we're at the first of the wide lines. HaMelech V'Akal Yirchutzu Es Pneihem. So that's a quote for the Mishnah. We'll just quickly flip back to the beginning of the Perek on Daf Ayin Gimel Amid Beis. And the Mishnah tells us in the second line, HaMelech V'Akal Yirchutzu Es Pneihem. That even though there's an Isur Achitzin, one of the five Inuim, but we're lenient with regard to both the Melech, and we'll see why, and the case of Akala. Rashi on the Mishnah says, Melech darko ushvacho lios nar. In other words, there's a mitzvah of respecting the king. He should have splendor. He should look in a very kempt way, very praiseworthy way, very presentable. Shenemar, and the pasuk in Yeshaya says, Melech biyofyo techzeno einecha. So Rashi is already foretelling what we're going to see in the Gemara here on Daf Ayin Chesam in Beis. And then Vakala tzricha noi, she too has to look beautiful and attractive. Ad shetechavev al baila, because these are the critical moments in which she's trying to cement a relationship with her husband. Kol shloshim yom lechu pasi kuya kala. So for the first 30 days after Hachupa, she's called a Kala, and when Yom HaKippurim coincides with one of those days, then she washes herself. Now notice that the Mishnah goes on and says, V'achaya, that's a woman who gave birth, Tinol es hasandol, she's permitted to wear shoes on Yom Kippur. But then it says, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, that's according to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. But V'chachomim osrim, and the Chachomim prohibited. So if Rabbi Eliezer is the one who's being lenient with regard to a chaya in the Mishnah, right, we're just reviewing the Mishnah at the beginning of the parak. The Chachomim Osrim, the Chachom are not willing to be lenient in the case of a chaya. How do we interpret the first part of the Mishnah? Va'melech va'kal yirchtu as pneihem. Is that also Divrei Rabbi Eliezer? There's a very unclear formulation here. When the Mishnah says Divrei Rabbi Eliezer in the case of a chaya, allowing a chaya to wear shoes on Yom Kippur, is that also true with regard to HaMelech V'Akal regarding the Heter Achitza? Is that also a statement of Rabbi Eliezer? And therefore when it says Chachomim Osrim, that statement of Chachom Osrim relates all the way back to the beginning, to the Reisha of HaMelech V'Akal. In other words, Is it that Melech V'Akal Yirchutzu Es Pneihem, period, and that's according to everyone, and it's an anonymous Mishnah, and it's apparently halacha, there's no controversy about it. The controversy between Rabbi Eliezer and Chachamim is only with regard to Chaya. Or should we assume that the words Divrei Rabbi Eliezer Chacham Osrim go back on the entire Mishnah, and they also include HaMelech V'Akal?
I assume this is not the first time that we meet this kind of problem. I'm sure the Mishnah is written this way in
right.
Many places. I think a brush is both of them.
Right, right. But yeah, I guess, you know, I think every case, as far as I know, I don't know of any rules, Joel. Anyway, let's see the Gemara now. This is where we left it. I'm Ches Hamid Beis, and we're talking about the first of the wide lines. So first the Gemara Kedarka Bakodesh quotes the Mishnah, Melech V'Akal Yirchutzu Es Pneihem. Masnisin Mani. Who's the author of our Mishnah? In other words, who's the Mandiomar who's willing to be lenient as far as Melech and Kala with regard to the Iser Inui of Rechitza? And the Gemara's answer is Rabbi Hananya Ben Tradion. Rav Hananya ben Tradion is going to be quoted in a brisa regarding this case of Melech and Kala. Okay, so he tells you here that the Gemara is trying to figure out if the machlokus between Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer applies only to Chaya, only to a woman who gave birth, and the leniency of Rabbi Eliezer regarding Nilas Hassan, the case Chaya is limited to Rabbi Eliezer, Shita the Chacham rejected. But what about the case of Melech V'Chaya? Do they argue also, Rabbi Eliezer and Chacham, about Melech V'Kala?
This would have to do with our first question then.
Correct. This is our first question. And the one who's going to address this question is Rav Hananya ben Tradion in his Braisa. The Sanya we learned in a Braisa, HaMelech V'Kala lo yirchutzu es pneihem. Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer HaMelech V'Akal Yirchutzu Es Pneihem. Now there's Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion in this brisa is adding the following qualification, that when the Mishnah states that Melech Vekala Yirchtzutz Pneim, that's only according to Rabbi Eliezer, but in fact the Chachamim say, and that's the ratio of this price, HaMelech Vekala Lo Yirchtzutz Pneim. In other words, what Rabbi Hananya Ben Trajan is clarifying for us is that the Mishnah, which allows and has a leniency for Melech and Kala, as far as Rechitza, that reflects the sheet of whom? Of Rabbi Eliezer. And then he, Rabbi Eliezer, goes on to say, Achaya. Period. That's the ratio of this price. So the ratio of this price, Rabbi Hananya Ben Trajan tells you that it's only Rabbi Eliezer who is lenient with regard to Melech and Kala in terms of the Isur Rechitza. Now we have the second part of the Braisa. Hachaya lo tinolas hasandol. This is the Shitas Chachamim. They prohibit a Chaya from wearing shoes. And Rabbi Hananya Ben Trajan Om Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Hachaya tinol es hasandol. So just to summarize, we have here a double machlokus between Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer. One machlokus with regard to Melech and Kala, and a second machlokus with regard to Chaya. In both cases, the shita of Rabbi Eliezer is Lekula, and the shita of the Chacham is Lechumra. And now the Gemara is going to analyze this machlokus. So it's only because of the Braisa of Hananya Ben Trajan that we really get a grasp on what is Chaya, what is the situation of Melech and Kala with regard to the Shitas Chachamim. And the answer is, Rabbi Hananya Ben Trajan reports that the Chachamim never accepted the Kula of Kala and Melech. My Taima. And what was the reason that Rabbi Eliezer was Mekil and he allowed a Melech to wash on Yom Kippur? And this we've already seen in Rashi on the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek. Melech Mishum Dechsiv. There's a pasuk Yeshayahu Hanavi, Melech biyofyo sechezena einecha. Meaning, the Melech has to present himself as being very attractive. He's got to be in his best, his Sunday best. He cannot look fashlumpedik, unkempt. He's got to present himself. And Lefiani is daiti, again, I don't have any commentaries here, but I think this is a reflection of the mitzvah of Som Tasim Alecha Melech, because the Gemara says that Som Tasim Alecha Melech means more than just to appoint the king, but that you have to be mechabed the king, you have to give honor to the king. And the halacha is very strict with the honor that we have to give to the king, because normally, let's say you find the mitzvah of kibud with regard to the Talmud Chacham, is Talmud Chacham shemachal kvodo machal, he can be mochal on his kavod, but a melech, because he really represents the entire people, he doesn't even have bailus, he doesn't have ownership, so to speak, over his own kavod, and therefore melech machal kvodo, the Gemara says in Kiddushin, ein kvodo machal. So it's really a double chiv. There's a chiv on the nation, on the rank and file citizen to be mechabed the melech, and there's a chiv on the melech to make sure that he appears in the most respectable way, so that people will respect him. And that's why, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's absolutely necessary for him, the king, to wash himself on Yom HaKippurim. And again, the Ran points out that had this been a regular Doraisa of Rechitza, you know, as if the Issa Rechitza would have been a classical Issa Doraisa, Rabbi Eliezer would have no room for being Mekil on behalf of the Melech. In other words, covered Melech would have to give way to the Iser of Rechitza, says the Ran, but there's something unique about the Iser Inui in that the Chachamim were granted the authority to determine when the Iser Inui applies and when it doesn't apply. And therefore they made a statement that for the sake of Kvod Melech, Rechitza is necessary. What do the Chachamim hold? The Gemara doesn't analyze that question. We can only guess that the Chacham hold that if he takes a shower on Erev Yom Kippur, he goes to mikveh and so forth and so on, then hopefully he'll smell rosy over the course of the next 24 hours. It's not absolutely necessary to wash himself every single 24-hour unit.
Let's say wash his face. It makes his face only out of body.
Right, we're talking about his face.
It doesn't really smell, really. It's really just
because the face gets sweated up and maybe gets dark. Or it's
appearance, not really smell.
Parents, you say?
Appearance.
Appearance, yeah, appearance. What about the case of a kala? So the, my timer, why is Rabbi Eliezer lenient in the case of a kala, and he allows for chitz on Yom Kippur? He says, "Kidei shelo tizgana al bailo." Right? That means she has to appear very beautiful and attractive to her husband. And this is an absolute chiv, especially at the beginning of the marriage when the relationship is being cemented. You know, you find women who are very laid back about this. They're unkempt, you know, they don't this. As soon as they go out, they're all faputzed. That's not right. The halacha requires that a woman has to look, you know, her appearance has to be attractive to her husband. And there are many halachas, by the way, that reflect this halach of shalot hizgana al baila, you know, they're not to have the gnus al baila. The whole issue, for example, of what the Jewish attitude towards nudity is, has to do with this halach of lotus kan al bail, if you know what I'm referring to. You know, having relations, intimate relations at night, or during the day, you know, in a dark room, and so forth and so on. It all has to do with the lotus kan al bail, you know, without going into details. But you see that the halacha is very concerned about this. And at least during the first 30 days, when she has the status of a kala, as we'll soon see, Rabbi Eliezer says that the Chachamim had to make an allowance for her, and they were lenient with regard to her chitza on Yom HaKippur. But only, as we said, in the name of the Ran, because this is not a hardcore, given, you know, a definite and well-defined Isur. It was given to the Chachamim to define when this Isur applies and when it doesn't apply. Of course, you're all thinking of Chol HaMoed, of course, coming around the bend. And we have many heterim, many licenses to do things on Chol HaMoed. Either Torah says Mikroi Kodesh. The answer is that the Chachamim were granted the authority to tell us when we're forbidden from halacha, under what categories, what cases, what scenarios, and when we could be more lenient. And in fact, do you know how many categories of heter halacha there are on Chol HaMoed? Five. There are five different categories. Kala, Omalei Rav LeRabbi Chiya, right? The nephew turns to his uncle. This is classic. He says, "Kala ad kama? How long is she considered from the time of the chuppah kala, as far as heter achitza is concerned? Notice, when did Yom HaKippurim fall? When did it coincide with what distance from her chuppah?" Omalei, he says, "Kidasanya, we learned in Ksubis." Interesting. This brisa in Ksubis, if I remember correctly, is addressing the case of Avelus. And the Gemara has a scenario which, by the way, is unfortunately way too common in human experience, in which one of the relatives of the Kala, and then the Gemara is another case where one of the relatives of the Chosin dies either right before the Chuppah, right after the Chuppah, and then whole Sugin Ksuvis on Daf Dalet. And it says over there in the Braisa, Ein Monim Tachshitim in Akala Kol Shloshim Yom, that for the first 30 days, even if she's in a state of avelus, and normally an avela is not allowed to wear all these tachshitim, she's not allowed to do sicha and perfumes and oils, and the same thing applies also on Yom Kippur, but here, for the sake of a kal, kol shloshim yom, the first 30 days after chuppah, the halacha waives the isur, kedei shelo tizgana al baila, and overrides the isur of avelus, and here in our context, the iser of a rechitz on Yom HaKippurim. All this is to guarantee that she looks noah with beauty and attractiveness to be motzi chein b'enei baila. I have here an interesting footnote that I wanted to share with you, and he says the following: Tzarech biur. He says we have a problem over here. Eich lom de mikan. Bisugyan ad kamenech sheves kala halo ein midubar sham klal mi lamid yom shel chupa ela mi lamid yom shel avelus. In other words, when the Gemara quotes a brisa ksubas daf dalid ein monet tachshidim nakal kol shloshim yom, the significance, the countdown of the shloshim yom, is not the shloshim yom beginning with her chupa, but rather, if you check out the brisa, it's the shloshim yom beginning with her avelus, meaning from the time of what we call stimas hagolel, after the deceased was buried. V'yesh l'tareitz, he gives the following answer: Shezelya pasha l'gemara she yosem shloshim yom ichu pasa lo nechsheves kala. The Gemara knew, even in its question, that more than 30 days she's not called a kala. Ela misafkele, what was the Gemara vacillating about? Ulai pachos misa, maybe her status as a kala terminates even earlier than 30 days. V'alzeh shapir muchach shekevan shi tirula tachshita kol shloshim yom shal avelus, since the Gemara gives her license to wear tachshitim for the first 30 days of Avelus, even though the Avelus happened immediately on the very day of her chuppah, muchach, we see from that, shenikres kala kol shloshim yom. In other words, how long of a period of time is Avelus? Avelus is shloshim yom. But in this case, we were matir Avelus for the entire period of shloshim yom. But let me just explain it to you this way. Supposing I were to argue that a kala has the status of a kala for the first week of her marriage, what we call shibas yimei mishna. Let me just theoretically. Or somebody would argue it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks. The answer is, since it says that if the avelus coincides with a chuppah, she can wear her tachshitim for the full 30 days of avelus. The entire period of avelus is completely undermined and suspended for the sake of a kala. It must be that her status of a kala extends for 30 days. If her status of a kala would terminate after a week or two or three, why would she get that extra amount of time to override and trump the Isur avelus? This whole shtickel Torah that I shared with you is brought down here in the footnote in the name of the Machzis Hashekel, one of the great Mefarshim on Shulchan Aruch. I actually own one.
If a woman gets married, on the day of the marriage,
her father dies.
So she has 30 days
of Avelus. That's the first period of Avelus. And during those 30 days, she's a Kala. How do I know she's a Kala? Because the Braisa says that for the whole balance of 30 days of Avelus, she's allowed to wear tachshitim. If she was only a kala sometime less than 30 days, then why would she get that extra amount of time, the increment between, let's say, a week and the 30 days, to wear tachshit?
In other words, it doesn't affect her at all.
In that case, well, no, I wouldn't say the avelus doesn't affect her at all. We're only talking about tachshit, you know. That was a special license that was granted to her because she has to look. She has to wash herself. Alright? Now we get back to Chaya. With regard to a woman who gave birth, the Mishnah in the name of Rabbi Eliezer establishes Hachaya Tinol Es Hasandol. We're going to be lenient in the case of a woman who gave birth, and we're going to allow her to wear shoes on Yom Kippur. Says Gemara, what's the reason for that? Mishum Sina. Because otherwise she may catch a cold. The floor, the ground is cold, and when her feet get cold, she might catch a cold. She's very susceptible. You know, her immune system is low. Her energy is at a minimum, and therefore, for the sake of her health, we have to make sure she's not going barefoot. Again, you and I might say, well, you know, today we have all sorts of clogs and sneakers and whatnot. I mean, why would she catch a cold? And maybe that's exactly why the Chachamim are not so impressed with the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, we're worried about granting or guaranteeing her protection. If we have to guarantee her protection, then we have to allow her to wear shoes. You know, I was reminded of the Gemara. I think it's also in Ksubas. The Gemara says, "Hakol bidei shamayim chutz mitzinin upachin." You remember that Gemara? That when it comes to catching a cold, the Gemara blames the person himself. It doesn't have to be part of a divine providence, a divine scheme. So I once sent this Gemara, I photocopied, I sent it to Rav Harosh, because Rav Harosh writes in his book that absolutely everything that happens to you is min hashamayim. Every single event that happens in your life is not coincidence. And he published in a book, which is a bestseller, called Garden of Emunah, right? And it's been translated into many languages. You read it? You don't have to be embarrassed. I think it's a very good book. But this is one of his main theses. I don't know what you call it in plural. Thesis. That everything's been a shamayim. Everything's good, and you have to, you know, if you stub your toe, you got to figure out why you stubbed your toe. You know, it's a message from heaven. So I asked the Makash in a fax. I wrote on the side of the Gemara in Ksubis, it says Chutz Mitzinin Upachin. So Vaistoy said, I don't know if it's only Tzinin Upachin, but a man could expose himself to danger if he's not careful about himself.
He's going to get sick.
And he's going to get sick, you know, like it or not. That's not Bidei Shamayim. And Rashi embellishes there in Ksubis. I forget what that. Anyway, I don't know if he ever saw the fact, but I never got a response. So if you see Rav Harish asking this Kash, you don't have to quote me, by the way. Right, Omar Shmuel. Shmuel says in Machmas Sakonis Akrov Mutar. In other words, Shmuel wants to expand this beyond the case of a chaya. And not only that, Shmuel seems to be presenting this as a normative halacha, even according to the Chachamim. That is, if there's a place where there are akravim around. You know, these are scorpions. You have to be, how does he translate it? Akrav is a scorpion. Even to this day, my wife, we will live in Malei Adumim, not in the Malei Adumim of today. I'm talking about the Malei Adumim of then, you know, over 30 years ago. Yeah, no, we lived in an Ashkubit. I mean, it was mamish. You can't believe what it was. It was just they plopped down this prefab. And my wife was 8 months pregnant. She got stung by a scorpion. Yeah. So it was a little embarrassing because at the time she wasn't properly dressed, but we rushed her. On the yeshuv, there were 60 families in the yeshuv, they had an ambulance. I remember Avraham, the ambulance driver. Mizrahi was his last name. Oh, I'd love to see him. Anyway, so he drove my wife, you know, to the hospital, and the Hesdenics came in and they looked for the Akrav, you know, these are my students, and you know, with their guts and everything, and they found the Akrav, you know. And because in the hospital they want to see the Akrav, because sometimes they can extract some of its toxin, and believe it or not, they can inject it, and it really. But at the end of the day, it was a black Akrav, not a yellow Akrav. So
they found that Akrav, they captured it,
and they captured it, and they brought it to the hospital. Yeah.
Well, how was the reaction to it?
She was freaked out. I mean, totally freaked out. I mean, she remembers this to this day. I don't know if she was in pain. It was more psychological than.
You saw that Akrav.
Yeah. She found it. She pushed it off of her towel, and there it was in the towel. So anyway, we always say that's why my first son, this is, he wasn't born yet at that time, he was an embryo. That's why he's so levendig. You know, he's a very wild guy. But all right. So in any event, Shmuel says that it's mutter in the case of Sakanat Akrav. And once again, I want to point out a footnote that he has on the bottom. He says, the Chiddush of Shmuel, which ostensibly, obviously, the only way you can protect yourself from these very dangerous scorpions is by wearing shoes. I mean, L'chora Pashtus, Pshita Maikamashbalon, that's Pikuach Nefesh, Docha Kol Tarku, and certainly Isu Nilas Asando. He says, Afilu B'mokum She'en Yodua She'metsuyim Bo Akravim, El She'esh Lachush Lakravim. You know, remember that we once spoke about a chola, that sometimes you have a situation of a chola who's in sakana, and sometimes you have a situation where the chashash is, if he fasts, he'll become a chola sheish bo sakana. Like, here's a situation where we apply the principle of safek nefash lahakel, even though we don't know that there are akravim around, but there's a chashash, maybe there are akravim around. And in the back, on page Pehei, which is called the Yalkut HaBi'urim, if you give me just a second, I want to share with you an embellishment. He says the following. Mikan kasha latur. Excuse me. Mikan maksha tur. This is at the end of Siman Tuf Reish Yud Dalid. This print is a little small here. He says, Mikan maksha tur al bal halachas gedolos. The Bahad writes that aholech litzorech mitzvah, he's on his way in Yom Kippur to do a mitzvah, v'choshesh mishum akrav, and he's afraid that maybe there's a scorpion, mutar latof raglo ukayotze bazeh laderech. He's allowed to wrap himself around with some sort of protection in order to make sure he doesn't get bitten by the scorpion when he goes out on the road. Hikshat Tur, so the Tur asks, if he's talking about a case of Sakonis Akrov, why does he have to do this whole thing of Atifas HaRegel, the whole ganz of business, you know, bring all these wrappings and everything? He says, Mutar Afil B'minol Mamish. He could wear shoes. And that's what we saw in Shmuel, we paskel like Shmuel. And not only that, he asks another kasha. Vafiluk she'enol itzarf mitzvah. Why did the Bahag feel so compelled to come up with this heter dafka because he's on the way to do a mitzvah? You know, otherwise, let him stay home. So the Beit Yosef, who's, you know, the super commentator in the tour, he wants to come to defend the Bahag, and he says the following. Yesh li yashiv divrei Bahag, she'kevon she'heter mishum sakona, since there's a heter of sakona, then what you do the maximum in order to be mavatel to exclude the takonim sagi if it's enough by tifas raglo k'de levatel sakono lo itirlo linol minol mamish. So Rabosai, I was thinking, what's the machlokas here between the Tur and the Bahag? The Bahag says we got to do whatever we can to try to avoid violating Yom Kippur, even though this is a chashash of sakana, and we're going to suffice with Atifas HaRegel, and if he's not on his way to Bar Mitzvah, let him stay home. And the Torah says, no, let's be very liberal about it. You know, the floodgates are open. If he's going to a place where there's a chashash sakana, you don't even have to blink. And this, by the way, Rabosai, I know it sounds like a very rare kind of scenario. You know, how often do we, on, you know, when was the last Yom Kippur that you went to a place with Shash Akravim, you know, when you, if you lived in Malay to him a fan?
It's just a principle.
Exactly. There's a tremendous principle here. You're right. This is a matter of principle. For example, in the case of a cholet, should we try to minimize the damage, you know, and give the cholah, you know, the little pieces of food and space it out, what's called shiurim, and, you know, lacha kadech, it was prast, you know, pox mikashir. Or should we say, no, the floodgates are open? I had the shaila mamish yesterday. A man called me up, many of you know him, his wife was going in for a cesarean, and he wanted to know on Yom Kippur, Mazel Tov, right, they had a girl, and he wants to know on Yom Kippur, what should he do? She has to cut up, you know, little pieces and start counting and this, that, and the other thing. And basically, I think it boils down to this machlokas between the Tur and the Beis Yosef. And again, you could always make chilukim, but fundamentally in concept, the Tur is saying hutra. You know, once it's mutter, the floodgates are open, you don't have to start dancing, you know, between the raindrops and figure out how you can avoid it. Until that happens, you'll get bitten by a scorpion. And the Bahag says, no, you have to be well thought out, you know, try to minimize it to the extent you can, because it's only dechuya, and it's not a hutra. Kach nira lefi ani is tight.
And then when you come back out of the Golden Street or whatever it is, you take your shoes off.
What is he afraid of?
He's afraid that the Goyim will laugh. He says the Goyim will make jokes and make fun of you. And
is he afraid it might lead to... I guess we have to, those of us who were raised in a Western society, I think we all are, whether we were here or there or there or Australia or Canada, wherever you are, I think we have to bless Hashem that we didn't experience those fears. Okay, Rabbi, so now we start the sugya of what's called shir achil. What is the minimum shir that's prohibited on Yom Kippur, at least on a deraisa level? Then we have an iser of chatzi shir, but let's know what the shir of it is. Now, let's just review. With regard to kol isurei Torah, with the exception of Yom Kippur, what's the shir?
Kizayis.
Here, the Mishnah establishes, we'll go back to the Mishnah again, that the shir of ha'ochel on Yom Kippur is kikoseves hagasa. Okay, kemoa ukagari nasa. Okay, and this kemoa ukagari nasa is going to engender a whole discussion here.
It's not much, but
it's larger than the kizayis. Right, it's larger than the kizayis, but the issue in the Gemara, vacillating back and forth, is it larger than the kibetza? That's going to be the main subject of that discussion. So the Mishnah says, "Ha'ochel koseves hagasa. If he does a b'mezid, he's chayev karis. Does a b'shogeg, he's chayev a chatas." Right? We said the shari suyim, what we discussed before about nilas hasandal, rechitza, and sicha. Those are only whatever, whether it's drabanan or close to doraisas, but certainly not a chayev karis. But with regard to achil and shsiya, we're talking about a chayev karis, and that's pretty rare. I mean, last night in Amakashi, we discussed the Chiv Karis in the case of Chelev and Ochel Tomei. There were a few cases, but it's pretty rare. Most Machos Asuras, like Nevelis and Trefus and Shkots Rotsam, are only a Chiv Lav and Malkus. So we're in a very severe situation here with regard to Achila on Yom Kippur. Is by Rav Papa. Rav Papa wanted to know. Here we're turning to Daf Ayintes Omen Aleph. Kikoseves Sha'amru, when the Mishnah establishes in the name of the Chachamim that the shear of Achil on Yom Kippur is Koseves, Big Gari Nasa, O Below Gari Nasa. What exactly is the size of this Koseves? Is it with its pit? And we're going to soon see that the pit of this Koseves is very large. You know, its volume, maybe even you know, is greater than that of the basar of the tamar of this koseves, or below garinasa. You know, but you have to ask yourself the question: what do you mean below garinasa? You know, we're just measuring, and this is a great chumrah, the size of the basar of the you know, minus the pit. How are we going to interpret the Mishnah? The Mishnah says uki garinasa. I mean, it can't be that a papa didn't recognize what it says in the Mishnah. So apparently, what he understands as kigari nasa is shemeshayrin o akoseves o gari nasa. Now, he understands that both are more or less the same size. And there's a whole sugin yivamis which has a parallel discussion in a different context. Okay. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, "V'hadik tani masnisin uki gari nasa mi boile." He has a suffix, Rav Papa. Hachi kamer. Perhaps this is what the Mishnah means. Kimoa uki gari nasa yachad. Does it mean the combination thereof? Odilma hachi kamer. Kimoa ki gari nasa. Like her, right? The koseves, or like her, her pit. By the way, how does he translate the word garin? I translate it as a pit. Okay, he doesn't have a fancier English word for it. Okay, that was, you know, literary. Boy, Rav Ashi, and we have a similar suffix in Rav Ashi as far as what's called etzem min hameis, a bone, even a part of a bone of a human being is metame, what's called bimaga uvimasa, and the shear. The minimum shear of that size of the bone is sa'ora, which is the size of a kernel of barley. So boy Rav Ashi wants to know when the Chachamim said that etzem means a bone of the dead, is kisa'ora, it has to be as large as a barley in order to be metame b'magam masa. How do we exactly evaluate the volume or the size of a sa'ora? Bikli pasa. Do we consider the klipa as well, which is a much larger shear, as the covering over the barley, or the kernel of barley, and less than that is not metami, that would be lakula, correct? In other words, right, I think if I'm not mistaken, it has, yeah, it has a certain thickness to it.
The barley is exactly the same size.
I guess a standard, yeah, an average barley, like an average beitza. But also, I'm just testing you here. If I make it larger, is that a kula or a chumra?
It's a kula.
A kula, exactly. And that's true for both Yom Kippur and for Tumas Magu Mas and Mes, and Etzem Shel Mes, because the larger the shear, the more likely it is that I did not fulfill the shear, and therefore I didn't violate the Isser, or I'm not tummy. Oh, Dilma, oh, below klipasa, we should evaluate the barley without its klipa. And that suffix of Rav Ashi itself is only the first suffix that he had. He had another suffix, which is, I think, independent of the first one. And that is bilacha obyavesha. Notice this barley, in its original natural state, is full of moisture. That's how it grows from the ground, and that would be a larger shear because it also has its liquids in it. Or should we look at a yevesha, because when it withers away and the lachas is removed, it's a much smaller volume. And I just want to quote to you what he says over here. He says yesh shepirshu. He's quoting one of the Rishonim, the Aruch, that the suffix of the Gemara with regard of Rav Papa is kamo uki garinosa hainu koseves kibriosa im hagarin v'od garin nosaf. In other words, that's not the way we interpreted the Gemara, but you should be aware of the Shita of Rav Nosson Bala Aruch, because he wants to claim that when it says in Rav Papa's first tzad at the top of the page, Kikoseves Sha'amu Bigari Nasa, it means the Koseves itself, before we get to the next word in the Mishnah, Ukigari Nasa, the Koseves itself has the Garin in it. Ukigari Nasa. And this is a tremendous kula, because then what Rav Pop is doing, he's really expanding the volume, the minimum volume for the shear of Achila. It includes not only in this tzad the garin, but then it says uki garinosa. So the word kikosevis agasa means with its in its natural state kibriyosa, which means including the pit.
Loss.
And on top of that, to boot, you add a garinosa, and that's the word kigarinosa. Uki garinosa. What's it saying in the Mishnah? It's saying uki garinosa, right, with a vav? Keep having to turn back to the first Mishnah in the Perek. You want to look it up for me? Does it say uki garinosa? Yeah, uki garinosa. And kigarinosa. Not its garin in its natural state, the inner garin, but plus a garin. Oh, what's the other side? Koseves kibriyosa imagarin shebesocha visulo. And this Rabbi Nosson, the Bala Aruch, is quoted in the Sugya in Yevamos by Tosis. So this is a whole other pshat in the Sugya. In other words, the two tzadim of Papa is, do we add a garin to be mashlin the shir? And it was pashut. It was never an issue to Rav Papa that the Koseves Agas itself is in its natural state, including its garin. But what Rav Papa was vacillating about is, in order to make up the shear, do we have to add another garin? So it's 1.5, it's like 1.5. That's not the way we learned the sugya. Okay. So the Gemara now says that there's a fundamental difference between Rav Papa's Sofek and Rav Ashi's Sofek. Correct, we had the case of Rav Ashi in the Etzem Kisa'ora. And the Gemara says the following. Rav Ashi lomi boile hod Rav Papa. Rav Ashi had no issue and no doubt in his mind about the case of Koseves, whether it includes the garin or it's without the garin. It was absolutely pshita to him that you read the Mishnah in its straightforward way, and it means the Koseves with its garin. And why? Why was Rav Ashi absolutely convinced that we have to add the garin to make up the shear? Because gasa itmar. Because the Mishnah went out of its way to add an adjective to describe the Koseves and called it what? Gasa. Gasa means very large. And why did the Mishnah do so? To convey kol kama de gasa, the larger it is, that's when it fits the shear, and that means together with its garin. So now the Gemara says the opposite, and Rav Papa thought that Rav Ashi had no basis for a suffix. Rav Papa lomi boile hoder Rav Ashi. Rav Papa was confused about a kosevis, but he was not confused about the shear of etzem kisaora, because he understood without a shadow of a doubt that etzem kisaora means yevesha. It means after you take out its lachus. And why is that? Lacha, shiboles mikri. There are two different words that are used to describe a kernel of barley. One word is used for a kernel of barley in its natural state when it's saturated with moisture. That's called a shiboles. We don't call it a saora. So if I were to ask you to pass me a shiboles, and you would ask me to pass you a saora, I would be asking for X, and you'd be asking for Y. I would be asking for the barley in its natural state with the lachas, because I asked you for a shiboles. You asked me for saora. The word saora, says Rav Papa, is used, you know, if you look it up in the dictionary, for a yevesha. Shalomikli basa ushla mikri. If it doesn't have its klipa, then it's called ushla. So ushla is a kernel of barley after it's dried up and it no longer has its klipa. So wait, let's just go over this one more time. So again, what was Pasha to Rav Papa? That saora means yevesha. I'm sorry, I made a mistake, Rav Osei. There are three words. in the Hebrew language, or I'm not sure that Ushla is Hebrew. I think it's more like the Aramaic. But in any event, in the vernacular, in the spoken word, there are three different terms. Okay, there's lacha. I'm sorry. If it's in its natural state, with fresh off the tree, off the ground, and it's full of moisture, it's called what? A shibolus. Okay. And then there's something called a siora, and then there's something called ushla. Okay, what's the difference between siora and ushla? Ushla means that it's been stripped of its covering, of its klipa. Correct? How does he translate the word klipa? Not covering.
Shell.
Shell. Excellent. Shell. That was the word I needed. Okay, so if you take off the shell of a shiboles, of this natural barley...
You mean fresh barley.
Okay, but I meant to say this kernel. That was the word I'm looking for. Kernel of barley. Then if you take off its klipa, that's called an ushla. That's not called a sa'ora. Why did the Chachamim choose to describe the shear for Tumas Mes as si'ora? Because they're talking about a third category. And that's a dried kernel of barley with its klipa on. So again, in its pure natural state, it's called what? Shibolis. If it's in its natural state minus its klipa, we stripped off the shell, it's called ushla. If we dried it from its natural state, but we left the shell on, then and only then is it called siora. Okay, fine. Now the Gemara goes on and asks, this is the main sugya about kosevas hagasa, what exactly is the relationship between a kosevas hagasa and a kibetza? What is the shear of kosevas according to the way we measure the volume of a kosevas? Omar, and here's a girsa problem, but in any event, it's in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. So underline Rabbi Yehuda, because that name is going to come up over and over again in the sugya. Kosevas hagasa sha'amru yisera mikabetza. The shear of a kosevas is a little bit more than what? Than a kibetza. The kibluhu l'rabbanon, and it was known to the Chachamim with their wisdom, debahachi meisva or miyasva daite, and I would add the word shel adam, batzer miyachi, but less than that, lo miyasva daite shel adam. And here we get to the fundamental principle. This is a major, major breakthrough. What is achila on Yom HaKippur? It's not a maisa achila according to the standards of Kol Tarku, because then the shear would be what? Kizayis. But rather, it's halacha of miyasva daite. Miyasva daite means the opposite of inui. The flip side of inui, of being afflicted, is to have yishuv adas, to be in a state of satiation. How much do you have to eat in order to achieve miyasva daite? Says Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim knew with their wisdom that it would have to be at least a little bit more than a kibetza. Which is very interesting, because the shear of Birkas HaMazon, which is a shear of Sviya, is kibetza. But that's only to constitute, I guess, an achila sheyesh ba kidei Sviya. But here we need even more than that. Says Rabbi Yehuda, we need Yituve Daite, Yatva Daite, and that's only going to be achieved in something a little bit more than a kibetza. And how do we know this? Because the Torah never uses what word with regard to Yom Kippur? What word is completely omitted with regard to Yom Kippur? Achila. The Torah doesn't mention the word achila. When, had the Torah said achila and prohibited eating, it would be a different shear. It would be the shear of achila chashuva, which is a kizayis. But the Torah, instead of the word achila, the Torah deliberately avoids using the word achila. It uses the word v'inisem. And the flip side of v'inisem is to reach a state which is, you know, not just the minimum achila, but a yituve or yatve daite, a yishuv daito. And for that, says Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to have to eat a koseves hagasa, a large koseves, which is greater than a kibetz. Okay. Now, Rabosai, this halacha of a kibetza is relevant to sukkah. And if you look at Hilchas Sukkah in Shulchan Aruch, you'll see that if you eat less than a kibetza, you don't have to, technically speak, you don't have to eat it in the sukkah. It's considered like a snack. It's not a yeshiva kvua. The Torah says, Teshu came to Duru, which means that on sukkahs you have to eat a serious kind of meal in the sukkah. Outside the sukkah, you're allowed to eat smaller amounts, which are considered derech aroy on a very temporary basis. So Meisvei, the Gemara asks from a Mishnah in Masech to Sukkah. The Mishnah records a story that happened. In fact, two stories that happened. Maisa, the first story is that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai and Rabbi Gamliel were sitting outside the Sukkah, and a view, they brought two a meal, so to speak, or two foods, respectively, for these two giants. The Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, they brought him litom es hatavshir, just take a taste of the cholent that we're preparing for Sukkos. Ule Rabbi Gamliel, they brought him shtei kosavos udli shalmayim. So I don't know if udli shalmayim is going back even on Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, or maybe it's only going on Rabbi Gamliel. That was unclear to me. It makes sense that it's only going on Rabbi Gamliel because Rabbi Yochanan, they gave him only a te'ima. Okay, here we're presenting, you know, we're doing Shemesh Talmidei Chachamim, here are the two foods. The Amru, and they reported that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Gamliel told the members of the household, Ha'alum la'sukkah, means at those times the sukkah was on like a roof, and they said, bring it up to the sukkah. In other words, we're not going to eat it here. Now here's the question. It says, shtei kosavos. I mean, Rabbi Yehuda just told us that I'm not sure if kosavos means kosavos agasa. Okay, well, that's going to be an issue. But let's be very naive. You know, let's be very simplistic. He's got shtei kosavos. Rabbi Yehuda told us that one kosavos is larger than a kibetza. So would you say that when Rabbi Gamliel said, and Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai said, let's go up to the sukkah to eat them, was that the strict halacha, or they were taking upon themselves a super duper chumrah?
Was he going to share it with them, or was he going to eat it by
himself? Oh, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know.
Was it strict halacha?
It would have to be a strict halacha. Because again, Rabbi Yehuda says that one kosher service is greater than a kibetza. So for sure they had to go up to the sukkah. And look at the Braisa. The Braisa qualifies this Mishnah, V'tani Allah, lo mipnei shalocha came. Somehow the Braisa, again, the Braisa was written at the time of the Tanoim, so the Braisa could get away with this. You and I can't make this guess. Lo mipnei halacha came, shalocha kach. This wasn't based on the strict letter of the law. Because in fact, these meals that they were offering were achilas aroy, which you're allowed to eat outside the sukkah. Ella, but rather, sherotzu l'achmir l'atzmam. It's very interesting. You know, certain cases you want to accept upon yourself a chumrah, and it's ridiculous. You know, if, for example, if it's raining on sukkahs and you decide, are you going to be super duper and eat in the sukkah? Is there a must says that such a person, areyu kehejot? That's probably a pretty not a nice thing to say about a person. You know, it's like the worst thing that a Talmid Chacham could call you is an amaretz. You know, it's worse than even calling you a shegetz. So you can't always take chumras on yourself, especially with regard to sukkah. But what's the difference between the case where it rains, Ev, and the case where you have a certain minimum amount of eating and you want to be machmer on yourself? In the case of fruit, you're not chayav to eat it in the sukkah. But if somebody would be machmer on themselves and say, I will not eat this fruit outside the sukkah, is he a hejot? Yeah. Is he an amoretz? No. Why? How's that different in the case where it rains? Do you hear my point?
This is just a chumrah statement for himself.
No, but I'm asking, is it praiseworthy that he takes upon himself this chumrah, or would you put him in a category of a hedger? Which, trust me, is very pejorative. You don't want to be called a hedger. Not by Rabbi Berzon, and certainly not by the Ramah. You know what I'm saying? So the answer is the following. In the case of a fruit, or in the case of less than a shear, I don't know what this tavshil is made of. It was certain. It certainly is an achila, and not only that, it's an achila in sukkah. The Torah doesn't define it as a yeshiva shel keva, but I can take upon myself to expand my kiyum of yeshiva b'sukkah. I'll give you another example. Let's say your sukkah is on the other side of town. I'm not sure if I don't have a sukkah, if I have to walk all the way to your sukkah and ask you permission to eat in your sukkah. Maybe that's considered mitztayer. I don't know. Tzarech iyun. I'm not. But let's say I would decide, you know what? I'm not lazy. Now I'm a big, strong guy. And I want the exercise, so I'm going to walk all the way to the end of town, you know, miles and miles to sit in your sukkah. I'm not going to eat outside the sukkah. So would that be a hedgehog? No, because he has a yeshiva b'sukkah. Maybe he's part of it. But if the sukkah is rain, is rain in the sukkah, again, you have to know the shear of rain, you know, it's kapul and so forth, then it's not a sukkah. And your yeshiva is not a yeshiva. That's already kehedjot. Okay. But in any event, we see from this that that what's the size of a kosemes, and even two kosmos, is it less than a kebetz or more than a kebetz? Again, if it's only a chumra that they took upon themselves, what was the size of it?
Less than a kebetz.
It was less than a kebetz? You're saying it's fruit?
Yeah, it could be that the whole limud is the fact that he's not eating
right.
Fruit.
But I believe, again, don't quote me on this, Ev, because you're asking an excellent question. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that when it comes to certain fruits, like tamarim, if you eat a massive amount and it fills you up, then you could be koveh and achila even on fruit. Not all fruit. In fact, I think if I remember correctly, maybe next, you know, after Sukkot we'll be smarter when we start Masechta the Brachos and Yitzchem. I think the Gemara says that there was, again, we don't pass in this way, that if you eat enough tamarim and te'enim and so forth and so on, that you might even have to bench on it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's certainly a Brachos Ein Shem. So, I don't know all the answers to your questions, but in any event, the Gemara is going to derive from this that apparently a kosemis is more than a kibetzah. Otherwise, I'm sorry, just the opposite.
Yeah.
That a kosemis is less than a kibetzah. Otherwise, they would have been forced to eat in the sukkah mi'ikarat din and not b'toras chumra shechmira alatzim. Now the Gemara tells another story, which is also recorded in the Braisa. K'shenosnu lo l'rabbi tzadok ochel pachos mi'kibetzah. Nitolo b'mapa. Okay, this is less relevant to us. That's more relevant to Netilas Yadayim. Va'acholo, this is relevant to us. Chutz l'sukkah. In other words, apparently, less than a kibetza is potim in a sukkah. What's the mashmos? If it had been what? Kibetza or more, he would certainly have been chayav in sukkah. Now again, I don't know why in this case Reb Tzadik wasn't machmir on himself. That's a question. Right, maybe he was old, but whatever it is, he certainly is determining and fixing the shear for a chiyuv sukkah. And he's telling us what's the minimum shear for a sukkah. And the answer is, yeah, I think so. So what do we get from this? He had pachos mikibetzah. And he taught us three different halachas. One halach he taught us in this ochel pachos mikibetzah is that he's allowed to eat it without netilas yadayim. There's no chiyuv netilas yadayim on pachos mikashir beitzah. That's point number one. Point number two, actually taught us four halachas. Point number two is that he was korech mapa. Because even if he's not chayev in the takon of netilas yadayim, still he wants to guarantee that his hands are clean when he touches food. Because otherwise, he might contaminate them with all sorts of diseases and ushmarta modus nafshos seichem. So therefore, he was korech yadav b'map. Now he teaches us a third halacha, that if you eat pachos mikibetza, you don't have to eat it in the sukkah. Now he teaches us a fourth halacha, v'lo berech acharov. In other words, he's of the opinion, like Rabbi Yehuda, that unless you eat a full shear of svia, you're not chayiv birkas hamazon. And what's the shear of svia? Kibetza. And how much did he eat? Less than a kibetza. Even on a drabbanon level, he's not chayiv in birkas hamazon klal. Rabbi Yehuda never accepted the shear of kizayis. In any event, the Gemara now analyzes the story of Rabbi Tzadik. Ha kebeitza. Now you have to turn to Ayin Testament base. Ha kebeitza. Had it been a sheer kebeitza boy sukkah, the east al kedaita kolseva sagasa sha'amru yisera mi kebeitza Rav Yehuda, shita was that a kolseva sagasa is greater than that of a kebeitza. Hashta shtei kolsevos. Now the Gemara assumes here that each koseves was stripped, was removed of its garin. When they served the great scholars, Rabbi Yochum and Zaka, they removed the pits from inside. Because it's not derech b'nei Adam to serve someone that which he can't eat. Okay, whatever, that has to do with the society of that time. So the shtei kosovos were without the garinim, and if they mi'ikar adin they paskin, you didn't have to go into the sukkah. Apparently, the sum total of the value, the sum volume of the two kosovas, A plus B, is less than what? Less than a kebeitza. It means that the shtei kosovas below garinam, lo havi kebeitza. And the Gemara applies the following logic, that if there was a shear of kebeitza, there would be chayav in sukkah. The Brisa indicates that they only brought it up to the sukkah because of the chumrah. So it must be that the shtei kosovas is less than a kebeitza, and it was only a chumrah that they accepted on themselves to eat in the sukkah. Is kosevas agasa v'garinasa? If you have only one kosevas, okay, admittedly with its pit, but that certainly is less than two kosvos, even if they don't have their pits. Is mi havi? Mi avi yisera mi kebeitza. How can Rabbi Yehuda maintain that a kosevas agasa v'garinasa is greater than a kebeitza when we've just proven that two kosovos without their garinim are less than a kebeitza? In other words, at this point in the Gemara's thinking, when you would measure the, if you were to measure the volume of kosevas agasa, what percentage of it is contributed by the garin? If I don't know if that made any sense to you. Did it make sense? In other words, what's the majority of the volume of the kosevis? Is it the basar or is it the garin? Which is the primary or the majority, and which is the less, you know, less than 50%? Which is 51% and which is 49%? What is Gemara assuming? Again, keep in mind, the Gemara is saying that a kosevis with its garin is greater than two kosvos without its garin. I'm sorry, just the opposite. Two kosvos without their garinim are larger in volume than a koseves with its garin. It means that the basar is greater, right? Yeah. Because the Gemara thinks that the two kosavos would certainly be greater than one koseves with its garin. The garin is only a minority, let's say it's 49%. So if you tell me that two kosavos are less than a kebeitza, then one koseves with its garin is certainly less than a kebeitza. We'll soon see the Gemara is going to turn this upside down and say that no, the garin is equal to or maybe even greater than the basar apri. Amar Rav Yirmiya in shtei kosovos below garinosam lo avi kebeitza kosevas agasa v'garinosa havi yisera mi kebeitza. In other words, what the Gemara is now establishing is that the garin of this tamar, of this date, is greater in volume than the basar apri. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa wants to support Rav Yirmiya. Hainu diamri inchi. This is an idiomatic phrase that's used on the street. Trei kabi, the tamri tu kabim, which is a major volume, a measure of tamarim, of dates, is chad kaba de kashiyasa usriach. It has in it one kav de kashiyasa with its pits, and sriach means a little bit more. So it means that it's more than a kav of garinim. So the garin is greater than the pri. Rav, also, what time is it now?
12 o'clock.
12 o'clock. Rav, if I would ask you the following, again, it's up to you. I have a tremendous desire to go through the Gemara that we learned yesterday, because I feel we did an inadequate job. That's on Pehei Amud Beis. for about 15, 20 minutes. Would you give me the okay to do that? All right. Anyone who wants to go, go. You know, take a break or whatever. But anyone who wants to stay, is stay, and we'll start the Chumash.